All right. Y'all ready to get into the end of the fourth chapter, the fifth chapter? And we're going to talk about Ten Commandments tonight. That's where I plan to get to or get into. Say it that way. So there's a lot of interesting things we can find out about the, you know, when we get them, and the Ten Commandments and their relationship, I call it to us, or the Ten Commandments and their relationship to the New Testament, the New Covenant. But here in Deuteronomy, what, you know, this is not anything new. They've had these Ten Commandments how long now at this point? Yes, ma'am. This is, well, that's, I forget, you're the only, probably you're maybe the only one who hadn't been here in the last month. So, three weeks? 3 weeks? she knew I was going to mess with her. Anybody else need them? I've got a few. Yeah.
Are we done with the 43?
Yes. Yeah. If you get multiple staples, I'm sorry, but that's just the way I'm working. Right. My secretary quit on me, so. My secretary got lazy this week. That means I got lazy this week, so. You need one? Anybody? Everybody have theirs? The dog ate your homework. I know. Okay. Okay. Let's get flying here. No, actually, we're going to, like I say, this is, you know, I'll ask the question, how many years have the children of Israel had the Ten Commandments? How many years at this point? 40, right? Because they spent 40 years wandering in the wilderness. Because of their disbelief. So they, Romy, that's not a biblical term, but that's my term, okay. The idea of the fact that when I say roaming, that means God led roaming, okay. Maybe we'll pass muster on that one. So God was leading them in the wilderness. He never deserted them. He punished them. So you got to think about that a little bit too. So they've had these Ten Commandments, you know, for like I say, 40 years. Have they been living by the Ten Commandments at this point? Well, you would think so, wouldn't you? You would think so. But what Deuteronomy does is gives them the, I call it, the details of how to fulfill the Ten Commandments to please God. In other words, they have a reason for living, obeying those Ten Commandments, and they're trying to do it to please God. So that's why Deuteronomy goes, and we're going to see, it's going to go in some detail. Tonight, I'm just going to read them off. He's just repeating them. He's still giving them the background. This section here, beginning in verse 44 of chapter 4, actually continues it, or I'll call it, you remember we talked about Moses is going to give speeches? Well, we finished the first speech last week, okay, in verse 43. So it's actually determined that this is starting of the second speech. This speech is going to last a long time because what Moses is going to do is, again, we're going to get into, he's going to repeat the Ten Commandments, but then he's going to tell them how to, I'll call it, execute them in their everyday living. In other words, he's going to get specific about some things. And, you know, when we get into that, sometimes it's going to be a little tedious. And so we don't want to overlook that, because if we understand what God commanded them and how to carry it out, it will help us understand what God's commanded us and help us carry it out. I think the principles are all the same. The commands are different, we know that, but the idea of you know, obeying God is still the same. It's not going to change. We look at that, and we can continue. You know, when we look at verse chapter 6, there, the thing he emphasizes there is loving God, and loving God with all their heart, soul, mind, and strength. And then he tells them in chapter 5 that they have to obey the Ten Commandments. And then he's going to give them the practical reasons why, and you know, and tell us more about it. In chapters, like I say, 6 through 11, Moses is presenting the idea of loving obedience, loving God and obeying him. That's the idea we're going to be looking at in chapters 6 through 11. Chapters 12 through 26, it's a detailed exposition. of what it means to keep the Ten Commandments in all of life. In other words, their life is going to be consumed in keeping the Ten Commandments, and that's what Moses is going to detail them. But that takes, that's 15 chapters, 12 through 26. And we'll get there eventually, but I just wanted to mention that tonight too, as we begin. You know, Moses begins by reminding them what God has done for them and what their response should be. Can you think of some of the specific things that God has done for them that he reminds them of? At the end of chapter 4, a couple of things that we need to remember are outstanding. The giant king, yeah, the giant who was king of the giant. I'm sure there were other people who were giants just like him, okay? So, first thing right out of the bat, but what was one of the objections for their ancestors that they couldn't go in? The 10 objectors, they're too big. They're giants. And whereas, we are as grasshoppers in their sight. So what does God do to show them? First thing, they get over there and they defeat the land of the giants, so to speak. Okay. So God is showing them what they can do with him. You remember they tried it on their own earlier. And what happened? They got defeated with Ammon, I think it was. So, he's trying to make sure they understand that it's important for them to obey, to love him and obey him and follow his commands. Again, like I say, in verses 44 through 49, Moses is reminding Israel what God has done for them and what their response should be. And like I say, what specific act we talked about with that would be the destroying of the two kings there, the one that was the giant. How would this, knowing what their history, knowing what God has done for them, should that encourage Israel to keep God's commandments? How should that do that? How should it encourage them? Well, there's a verse in the New Testament sort of encompasses that. So it starts out as, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Well, could the children of Israel do all things through God who strengthened them? Yeah. The principle or the idea is the same. That's what God's trying to convey to them. They're trying to get that message. He's trying to make sure Moses emphasizes that. We're here, but I got to remind you of some things. Did you ever notice how Moses goes back and tells the history several times? I think several lessons ago I asked the question, who tells the history of the Israel better, Moses, Stephen, or me? I think we all agreed it wasn't me. Stephen does a really brief, good job, but Moses was there. That's a pretty good, I call it, Moses is we talk about in the New Testament, eyewitness accounts of the apostles. Moses gave us an eyewitness account. That's important. So we're looking at that from the standpoint of the history of the children of Israel, what God has done for them leading up to this point in time. Let's look at our questions for just a minute. We're going to look at about, I only gave you 9 this time, I know. But in the body of the printout I gave you, there are questions. And hopefully you looked at those. Anybody over there have any questions or comments before we dive into this? Yeah, John.
Going a little bit further into Joshua chapter 2.
Yeah.
Whenever they're spying out the city of Jericho, Rahab makes mention all the way to the Red Sea when they cross the Red Sea.
Yeah. Exactly. That's why I did this.
And then how he gave Og and Shiloh and Og into your hand. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. The irony of that is Rahab had more faith in their God than they did. That's the sad part, so to speak. So.
Mm-hmm.
No. And you know, as especially you're gonna, if we studied through with the history there in Joshua, would see there, those people are, you know, remember there's a, some tribe, some enemy, so to speak, that comes in and tries to make, say, we'll be your servants, you know, so they don't have to fight them, so to speak. And of course, Israel, that's not thinking, doesn't consult with God and messes up in that sense. The in this chapter 4, as we end, there's, I listed this question, and I'm hoping you'll understand why I listed it this way. It says, what three things did Moses speak to the people of Israel when they came out of Egypt? Okay. Yeah, I mean, okay, some places, let me see. Later on in the chapter, he words it a little different, but it's the same thing. You know, the last question I asked down there on question 9 says, how many times does Moses say the word hear, command, obey, and teach, you know, in those chapters? That was rhetorical. I didn't mean you to, you know, if you want to tediously read through all this and start keeping a counter, you know, that's fine. Please go ahead and do that. But as I call it, I just want you to notice it as you read through here, how many times he says that. And even in this chapter, or in these next, just couple of these three chapters here, 4, 5, and 6, how many times that's repeated or acknowledged. Testimonies, I think it's rendered in another, where is it? In verse 29, he renders it commandments, I think it is. There's a lot of different things, but the idea is the fact everything God has commanded them through Moses, they need to remember those. They can't forget those. Now, again, I'm going to say this. What two things did Moses insist they hear? Exactly. Now, why does he keep repeating these things? Why do I keep asking these same questions over and over again, so to speak? Because God must have thought it was important because he was instructing Moses to ask those questions, so to speak, or telling Moses to tell the people. So these things were important. Knowing God's commands or testimonies, his statutes and his rules, his regulations. In the New Testament, we would call it his doctrine, I think, would be the best way to put it. Knowing that and understanding that are so vital to our obedience to God. You know, we mentioned the fact, and one of these days I'll get the courage to try to teach knowing God in the adult class. I've taught it in the high school class. I need to redo my notes. It's been a while anyway. But one of these days I'll teach it in an adult class. The idea of having that intimate relationship, knowing God. You know, we've hinted at it a couple of times, but it's important to know God. And this is the way you know God, is by listening and obeying his commandments. Okay. And by loving him. Question 3 says, why does Moses say God made this covenant with us and not with our fathers? We may have hinted at this before. Come on. Y'all have voices. I know you do. Right. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's not like he's telling them anything different. And it goes back to my first question I asked when he first got in here. How many years did they have the Ten Commandments? But how many years had the covenant relationship that God established with their fathers? And we're not talking about the fathers in Egypt. We're talking about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. When it was all originally started, God kept referring to that, the covenant he made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But even if, when he made that covenant, where were the Ten Commandments? Where were they? This was before the Ten. He made that covenant before the Ten Commandments existed. He made that covenant basically with Abraham in Genesis 12. So the covenant, what do I want to say? The covenant originated with Abraham. And it continued with their fathers. But and the Ten Commandments were given to their fathers. But as we've mentioned, those 20 and older died. So now this group of children of Israel, he's making sure they understand God still wants them to be his people. That's why he's saying, I'm making this relationship, this covenant with you. He wants them to understand that. You know, even though that covenant started a long time ago, you need to understand, this is you and me, kids. We're in this together. And I think, you know, they didn't get it. You know, we know that. The history's going to show that they didn't really get it. But that's what God was trying to tell them. Now, how many of us can understand that? We read that, and that makes sense, doesn't it? God wanted that relationship with them. He wanted a relationship with their fathers, yes, but his fathers rejected him and tested him, and you know, he punished them for it. But now he says, we're at this point. At this point in time, I want to have that covenant with you. And I think that's why he's saying this. This is just a progression of the original covenant. You know, it's just a progression. You know, sad part about it is there's a lot of people, denominations in the world, saying that the Bible is outdated and we've got a new revelation, or there's some in Catholicism think that the Pope makes revelation. Other people think they have a revelation. It's sad to say, but that's not true. You know, because that's one, remember one of the things he said, you don't want to do what? Add to or take from? Don't add to or take from. Repeated in the New Testament, Revelation chapter 22, what's going to happen if they add to or take from for us? He said the plagues will be added and they'll be burned in. So, consequences if we add to or take from. So when God's telling these people, you are my people, this is my covenant with you, he's getting personal. We're going to see some other things too as we go through that emphasizes that.
It's interesting because that's the same thing today. Mm-hmm.
The next question, we're going to read question four because that's a part of this. Question four says, what type of interaction did the children have with the Lord at Horeb? What does he say about that specifically? Face to face. What else? They were afraid. But he face to face them out of what? The fire. Okay. Sometimes it's referred to as the fire and the smoke, that sort of thing. Were they afraid, physically afraid? Or were they fearful in reverence? I think both, yeah. To be honest with you, yeah, I'd be both. I just human nature says I'm going to be both if I know God. But I think a lot of that is the fact that it's just reverence. God wants them to love him and reverence him. And so I think that's what he's saying. But again, it's emphasizing the fact that this is a personal relationship he has with these people at this point in time. Well, see, that's just it. That's why he didn't show his face to them. That's why it was in the cloud. They couldn't get too close. Yeah. Well, they were there at the bottom. If we go back and study the original text where that event actually occurred, we would see that. They gathered at the bottom of the mountain. And of course, after Moses was up there for 40 days and they got weary, what happens when he came down? We know that. That's another thing, you know. Yeah. Yeah. But as they call it, what God's trying to tell them is, this is me and you, kid. Let's go with it. You know, we got it. You know, this is the way I'm going to lead you. Yes, Susan.
But I agree with Carla. I think if they hadn't been in the fire, they would have gone up on the mountain.
No, they were forbidden from doing that. They were forbidden from doing that, too. Yeah. Well, they better try, probably. But you know, at one point though, if you go back, I don't know how much I mentioned of it in my telling of the history. If you go back and look at it, he did take the elders and Moses and Joshua, I think it was 70, up to the mount. And didn't they have a session with God there? You know, and they didn't die. Because if they had gotten too close, what had God told them? They saw God, they would die. So they had to see the manifestations. So, you know, as I call it, they understood what their responsibility was as far as that goes. They didn't want to die. Not really, you know. So the idea is the fact that how special that relationship was when God manifested to him. Now, if God manifests to you in a cloud or a fire, what's going to be your reaction? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be scared too, you know. But we know truthfully God's not going to do that. His manifestation for us is not a fire. It's not a cloud. It's not a mountain. It's Jesus. Emmanuel, God is with us here on earth. We don't want to lose sight of that either as we go through this study. Let's just look at some things. Basically, we're going to look at the Ten Commandments. In the questions there on the second page or the first page. Let's start out, though. Let's go to 1 John chapter 5. 1 John chapter 5. I think we need to remind ourselves of some things before we get too caught up in the Ten Commandments. 1 John chapter 5. Chapter 5, beginning in verse 1, says, "Whoever believes that Jesus is the Christ is born of God, and whoever loves the Father loves the child born of him. By this we know that we love the children of God, when we love God and observe his commandments. For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not burdensome. For whatever is born of God overcomes the world, and this is the victory that has overcome the world, our faith. Who is the one who overcomes the world? But he who believes that Jesus is the Son of God." The idea that John's presenting there in 1 John needs to be our reassurance. Part of this is going to be the application for us when we look at that. Let's just go ahead and look in there in chapter 5. The first four of the Ten Commandments. What are they? What general? I'll put it this way. What's the one factor in the first four that we can relate to in the first four of the Ten Commandments? It's centered around God, isn't it? It's centered around God, okay, and our relationship with Him. How about the commandments? 5 through 10. What are they centered around? Our relationships with who? Each other, right? The Ten Commandments are about relationships. You know, I think we've mentioned that word before, you know, here in our study. And we're going to see how the Ten Commandments relate to that. You know, our relationship with God in service to Him, and our relationship with our fellow man in service to Him. That's why I went to 1 John, so we can understand that this is... The New Testament covers that same subject too when we go there. First of the Ten Commandments, "You shall have no other gods before me." Since God's character forms the basis of his covenant with his people, he demands absolute loyalty. When the intent of the heart is to put God first, apart one's outward actions will reveal it, then others can see God's character in us and in our actions. Yes, Jan.
This may sound way far off out here, but I just want to say it because it's important to me. Mm-hmm. But I think we should all be vegetarians because it says thou shalt not murder. It doesn't say thou shalt not murder people. Mm-hmm. It says thou shalt not murder, period. Mm-hmm. Which includes the murder of animals. Meat is murder.
Well, that's another subject altogether, like you say.
But
And that's covered in, and that's covered after the flood. Well, it is, but God covered that after the flood. People were vegetarians up until that point that we know about. After that, he gave them meat to eat. He gave them, the children of Israel, quail, which is meat. Okay, so we can't say that's a God command to be vegetarians. Oh, I know, but I'm just saying, yeah. Yeah, but we can't say that that's a requirement by God to be a vegetarian. Yeah. Well, you're murdering plants too when you eat plants. So. Yeah, no, that's what I say. That's for a whole other study. And we hadn't got to the kill. And we hadn't got to the kill one yet, Jan. We ain't got there for her. Okay, I know. It's okay. It's okay. We can handle it. The idea that we want to, of course, emphasize the fact is the Ten Commandments, how many of them are repeated in the New Testament? How many of them? Nine? Okay. You got a verse for me? See, you knew I was going to ask that. Y'all got to learn that. Y'all knew I'm going to want a proof. I want a proof. Well, there's a couple of places where Jesus repeats some of them, okay? In Matthew 19, he repeats some of them. In Luke 18, he repeats some of them. What's that? Matthew, I was going to say, there's more than one place. There's more than one place. What is it? Where is that? Shoot. I'm trying to find it. I had something else too. Yeah, Matthew 5, 21 through 30, right? Yeah, that's it. Yeah, okay. I have these places, you know, I have these in places, different places. But when you go into one of the things that I noticed too, when you go into 1 Corinthians and you look at that list where he winds up saying, and such were some of you, that's the Ten Commandments he's talking about. People were violators of the Ten Commandments. But once they were become converted and were baptized into Jesus Christ, they were not violators anymore, so to speak. So the idea is the fact that every one of the Ten Commandments is repeated, a lot of them by Jesus. What's the one that's not? Remember the Sabbath day, right? Yeah. You know, and as I call it, we're going to leave that for Jesse to discuss in Hebrews, okay? I'm just going to say that right now. The word Sabbath means rest, okay? In the, as I call it, there was a lot more meaning to the Sabbath day for the children of Israel than there was when God rested on that day. And there's other passages that talk about the rest, and Hebrews talks about it too. And he talks about the Sabbath rest. And so, you know, it can be some confusion on it. And so that's what I say, I don't have the time to do that tonight, or probably in this study. But I do want to emphasize the fact that there's some I call it implications, because this was, the Sabbath was instituted by God, you know, like I say, in the creation, as far as that Sabbath rest was on the seventh day. But we see nothing, I don't think anything about it, when we look at Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, what were they, you know, how they treated the Sabbath and all that sort of thing. We also see other things that Jesus, he was accused of working on the Sabbath, wasn't he? So, there's a difference in the Sabbath in the Old Testament and the Sabbath in the New Testament. And that's the only thing I'm going to say about it. the meaning of it anyway and what it means. So, you know, it is part of the Ten Commandments. And we'll get to that. We're going to talk a little bit more about it briefly. But the first one, kind of like, you shall have no other gods before me. What does that tell you? What does that mean to you? Go ahead. Idols, okay, but that's covered in the second one, so to speak, okay. But see, that's the point. He's talking in the second one. I think in some places it uses, you know, some versions say carved image, some say graven image. You know, it's something physical. But I think in verse one, he's also talking about things that anything that interferes with our service to God or anything that we put before God. God's first. You shall have no other gods before me. It doesn't have to be a graven image. It doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be. But that was what they were surrounded with. We want to make sure we understand that. That's what they were surrounded with. Idols. The heathens, heathen worship, idol worship. That's what they came from in Egypt. That's what the plagues were all about, was defeating all those idol gods that they had there in Egypt that surrounded them. But the point that I think that the Ten Commandments God is trying to make here with that one is, you got to love me more than these, and that's what he sums it up in chapter 6. You got to love me more than anything else. The second command is, you shall not make for yourself a carved image. It's like, this is kind of irony. Why did he make the second command? Shouldn't the first one have taken care of this? Think about it. The first one should have taken care of this, right? But what happened while Moses was on the mountain and when he came down, what was there in front of him? A golden calf, a graven image, right? So does that not imply that God knows man's hearts and he knows what they're going to do? They're going to sin. And that's why we've talked about it. What was the most important thing he kept telling, emphasizing them? Idolatry. Avoid idolatry. It's going to be the downfall of everything. Yes, Celeste.
It's also the second one. Don't even make an idol that you even want to say is like me. I think that's where he said, I did not show you in his form. Therefore, you can't even make a graven image that is to worship me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't even think of it now. I've read it somewhere just recently, probably in chapter 3 or 4, something like that. But today we're surrounded and with people with images of the cross, maybe a necklace, maybe a tattoo. Maybe something else. You know, I'm not here to condemn people for anything they have or anything like that. They had the tablets of stone written, but they'd also heard the verbiage that God, when he spoke it to them. You remember that? Or their ancestors had. But we have this. We have this. You've seen all the pictures of Jesus, and you've seen I don't know if they're called holograms or whatever, you know. What do you see? And you're supposed to look at a bunch of dots and see Jesus, you know, type of thing, you know, that type of thing. That, if that's not covered in the second one, it's covered in the first one. We're not supposed to be imagining what Jesus looked like, I don't think. I think we can. I don't think it's a sin, but we can't make that. The central part of our mind should not be on an image, but on service. And I think that's what he's saying. I'm a spirit. I'm not an image. I'm a spirit. That's why we're told to worship him in spirit and truth. You know, I'm not going to try to tell you I'm absolutely right or wrong. I'm just sort of giving you my opinion a little bit. But I think we need to be cautious about things like that. You know, I think we need to be cautious because the biggest influence on our lives is the same biggest influence that they had. Was their surrounding world they were living in. I think, John, you had something.
Because
Yeah. As I call it, that's what we have. That's a caution. And I may be old fuddy-duddy and thinking, you're not being progressive. And, kids nowadays need a visual. But they also need the truth. They need the Word of God. They need to know that God, through the Spirit, gave us this instruction. And they need to know that it's important that we know it and learn it and obey it. And they need to know that, what is he emphasizing here? God's love for them. You need to know that. Yeah, Clint. Exactly. The idea, you got to remember time and place when we're talking about these commandments at this point too. Idolatry had always been a problem for the children of Israel. They had been surrounded with it in Egypt. And then when they go through the land, they're surrounded with it there. The idea of going into the land of Canaan, it's there. That's why God's emphasizing these things about idols and about images. He's emphasized the fact that they're just stone or wood. But what is God? He's not a physical thing. He's a spiritual thing. And that involves so much of us. Not just our physical doing, but our spiritual doing. And I think that's what we have to remember. That's part of what he's saying here. The third one, we want to go ahead and get some of this done here. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. God's name and his character are inseparable. Using his holy name in a vain, empty manner is insulting and degrading. This could be done by purging oneself in a court of law, or by cursing, or just using his name in the wrong way, with an oath, or that type of thing. The idea that we worship God and we call his name. We call Jehovah, we call him God, we call him Lord. We need to be careful to make sure that we're not hypocritical in our worship and that we observe his commands and that we do it with the sincerity of heart that he deserves and demands. And the class is over because they're coming in. Okay, so we'll pick back up on the Sabbath day and then we'll try to finish next week. We're going to try to finish next week. We may not, but I appreciate your attention to everything tonight, and thanks for helping me out.